This is Murder in the Black with Steph and MD.
Welcome back to Murder in the Black. It is your host, Steph. So today we're going to get right into our crime case, and we are heading out to California, the sunny side of the West, and we catch up with Rakim Rocky Reyes, and he was originally from Rancho Cucamonga, California. Now, his family described him as full of energy, completely dedicated to his gift of dancing. And they said that Rocky really just was made for dancing. Now, to give you a little bit more detail, Rocky came from a very big family. And I believe his family was also blended. So maybe one of his parents had a marriage before, and so they brought in their kids. But they were a happy family. Rocky was the last child, so he was the baby. You can imagine being the last child of 12 kids. I mean, I'm pretty sure the spoiling was a 10 in that household. But his mother characterized him as her baby, even though he was 27 years old when we catch up with him. And she said she would often read the Bible to Rocky, but Rocky was attentive. Like, he actually listened to his mother and soaked up that wisdom that she tried to glean from teaching him about the Bible and the many lessons in the Bible. Now, his family seemed to be very spiritual. His father actually was the chaplain for San Bernardino County, and Rocky would often go with his father and help him out. He would dance on Skid Row. And I know you're probably thinking, what is up with this dancing? But Rocky just had a passion for dancing, and everybody who has a passion for something in particular, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it be gardening, dancing, singing, writing, or even just the love of comics, you can center yourselves in on when that event made such a splash in your life, when you were introduced to it, because that feeling is very parallel to love at first sight, right? We can always remember when we fell in love with the person. We can recount that memory as if it just happened. And for Rocky, that particular memory when he fell in love with dance and he was all about dance happened when his sister took him over to a nephew's house. And he got introduced to it at a house party. Now, the style of dance that he was introduced to was actually crumping. And if you remember, crumping was such a big thing back in the early 2000s. And if you're from the California area, then I'm sure you know exactly when that was. But I remember it because I remember going to a movie about the clown who crumped. Does anybody else remember that? But I absolutely love that style of dancing. It was very bold and new, and it was just something that the Black culture, we just always invent something new, right? Like within a particular genre. So dancing was no different. So when he saw crumping and that style of dance that was very popular at the time, he knew that he had to be a part of that movement. He had to be a part of moving his own body. And he admired dance and eventually got into different styles of dance. And his love for the art just grew along with his talent. He was an excellent dancer. He lived and breathed dancing. Now, he eventually decided that this was something that he wanted to do full time. So he needed to get an agent and turn his hobby into a professional career. And he did. He did a couple of tours with the Globetrotters. He eventually was casted in a movie for The Perfect Guy, starring Michael Ealy and Sanaa Lathan. His career was catapulting to the top. I mean, without much effort, because he really enjoyed dance. It wasn't something that he felt like he was obligated to do. It was something that was a part of him. It was just like breathing. So it was not a surprise to his family or people who knew him that his career was thriving. He even did commercials, and he was looking forward to, in 2016, he was looking forward to an audition with the Clippers in the coming weeks. When we catch up with Rocky, it is September of 2016, specifically around Labor Day. And it was the evening of Labor Day when Rocky's parents received a phone call. They were already in bed for the evening. It actually was around 11 o'clock that they received this phone call. And his mother actually picked up the phone. And it was Rocky's girlfriend, Christy. And she asked them if they heard from Rocky or had they talked to Rocky, because Rocky was due to come over to her home on that night, Labor Day evening, at 8 o'clock. But he hadn't showed back up. He actually wasn't even picking up his phone. So she was very concerned. And the thing about Rocky is that he's like most of us in the sense that our phones are attached to us. They're an extra appendage, right? Like if we have our hand, more than likely we have our phone. And even if you don't have your phone, like maybe you're not that person who carries their phone with them all the time and you do put it down, still, if someone were to call you or to text you, you check your phone with enough regularity that you would get back in contact with them within minutes or an hour. So this was Rocky. I mean, he actually carried his phone around him like it was extra appendage. And I'm guilty like Rocky. I do so as well. So if I miss your call, then it more than likely is because I wanted to. But sometimes in the off chance, it's not. And so Rocky always had his phone with him. And Rocky just, they couldn't understand why he wasn't picking up the phone. But they, you know, kind of just casted that doubt to the side. And so they got off the phone with Christy and decided to call Rocky. His mother did. And Rocky did not answer the phone. So they began to call around. Now, at this point, his parents are up. They're concerned. Christy's up. She's concerned. And so they reach out to his siblings just to figure out, have they talked to him before any type of real panic ensues? And that's when they realize that nobody in the family has talked to Rocky. And so then they take the next course of action, which is to call Rocky's friends. And his friends say, no, well, we haven't heard from Rocky, not at all. And one friend in particular by the name of Nick says initially, no, I haven't heard from Rocky, but he looks outside of his home and he sees a car that looks like Rocky's outside with the car running and a couple of doors down by his grandmother's house. And at first he doesn't think that it's Rocky's car. He thinks that it's a neighbor's car because somebody that is his neighbor has a car exactly like Rocky's. And so he doesn't think anything of it. But he goes outside to further look and just to explore, and he realizes this is indeed Rocky's car. So he calls Rocky's family back and tells them, hey, I think I found Rocky's car. It's on my street a couple of doors down at my grandmother's house, parked in front of her house, and he's not here, but the car is running. So he kind of asks for next steps. What do you want me to do? I mean, there's nobody in the car. The car is running. And automatically, Rocky's big sister, who becomes very influential in this case, tells him, like, call the police. We don't know where he is. He's not picking up his cell phone. Call the police. And so the family gets stressed. His parents and two of his siblings, including his older sister, they immediately get dressed and they drive from their home in Rancho Cucamonga to West Covina. And they get there very quickly. Now, when they get there, the police aren't there. And so they immediately inquire to Nick, what happened? Where's the police? Did they show up? And he says, yeah, they showed up and they turned off his car because the car was no longer running. And they left a report. And they're like, they left the report? And so as they're examining his car, they see that there's a laptop there. His wallet is there. These are things that he would not leave. I mean, and his car is running? This is all odd. And so they are dismayed, disappointed. Every adjective you could think of that would describe their attitudes concerning the police department. Why would the police department leave? I mean, this looks very suspect. They need to be on the scene, giving us more than just a report. So Rocky's mother calls the police department back and she tells them, y'all need to come back out here. I'm not satisfied. My son is missing. We don't know where he is. And the police explained to her, I'm sorry. We're not going to come back out. We explored his car. We looked, and it seems like he just got up out of his car and he went missing. And after all, he is 27 years old. If he wants to go missing for a couple of hours or days, weeks, months, he has the ability to do that. He is grown. Now, I would just like to stop here and just tell you guys how much I get to different cases, and this just burns me up. That the family tells police officers that this is not like their loved one. And yeah, they know that people go missing, and they know that this is the norm in a lot of cases for people to just up and go missing, and they don't want to waste their resources. But for the Reyes family, this was totally different. They knew that this was not typical of Rocky to just leave his wallet and his laptop and his personal belongings in the car and not be picking up the phone and just have his car running in the middle of the street. This is not who he is. And I want to talk a little bit more about that, but I'm going to reserve my opinion of that until the takeaway. And so the family, they come together and they are trying to put together the timeline, right? What happened on Labor Day? Well, for the Reyes family, most Black people in general, right? Any holiday, and especially if it falls during the summertime or the spring, we are looking for an opportunity to celebrate, right? And so just like, you know, your grandfather or your dad or your uncle, they want to throw something on the grill. Well, Mr. Reyes, Rocky's father, was just like that. He wanted to throw something on the grill. Why? Because it was Labor Day. And even though all of their children were grown, their kids would occasionally pop in during the holidays, whatever the holiday was, because they knew, they could guarantee that their dad was going to throw something on the grill. And so Rocky did this on Labor Day about 4 o'clock that afternoon. He comes over, and of course, his dad is barbecuing, mom's in the kitchen cooking. And so he comes by and he gets himself a plate. Now, his older brother is there on the couch sleeping, and he wakes him up just to chit chat with him and chat with his parents. And he reveals to them, you know, hey, just want to come over and get something to eat. I have a couple of errands to run after this. So he sits down, he gets himself a plate, and he starts to eat. And then he realizes that, you know, it's time to go. So he tells his parents, I have to go. And he tells his mom bye. She gives him a kiss on the forehead, tells him she'll see him soon. And he also tells his dad, well, I actually have to make a quick stop before I go to Christie's house. After, I have to make a stop and go and get my costume fitted. Now, to know Rocky is to absolutely know that he loved dancing. But the one thing about Rocky is he loved Comic-Con. Comic-Con is a place where you go and you celebrate anime, you celebrate the comics, you even have people coming out from these franchise movies that you see, like Marvel and Iron Man and all these. They come out to this big convention, and it's in different cities every year. And people get dressed up and they just have a good time. It's their time to cosplay and to dress up as the Joker, dress up as Superman, dress up as whomever is your favorite, right? And to know Rocky is to know that he absolutely, without a doubt, loved Comic-Con. He wanted to participate. And so he told his dad, I have to go get my costume fitted. So his dad said, okay, sure. You know, he said, after that, I'm going to head over to Christie's house. So they knew that he was going to leave. He left his parents specifically at 5 o'clock p.m. and he was headed over to this unknown person's house to go get his costume fitted. So while they're still there in West Covina amongst family, trying to figure out and piece together where this place could be amongst one another, Nick chimes in, and Nick is his best friend. He chimes in, well, hey, I know where he was going as well. And I actually know who he was going to see. So the family perks up. especially Rocky's older sister. She is already very suspicious of Nick at this point because she feels like, why is my brother's car found in your neighborhood by your grandmother's house? You act like you don't have a clue to what to do to get the police involved. You're the person who found it. This just all seems very suspicious. So when Nick volunteers the fact that he knows exactly where Rocky was going, she is even more suspicious of him. She's just like, okay, so why do you know that? And he volunteers that, I mean, the answer is very simple. I know where he went because I actually introduced him to this person. It's a costume designer. His name was Philip Von Wades. So how all of this came about is Nick was going to Comic-Con with Christy and Rocky. And so he had told Rocky, hey, I got my costume done. Well, Rocky needed someone to do his costume as well. And so it was a natural fit to introduce him to Philip Von Wades. So once the family now knows that Nick has information of this guy's address and this was the last place that he was supposed to go, well, you know what the family does? Because the police aren't doing anything, they hop in the car. At this point, it is now the very next day. It is midnight, and they head over to Philip Von Wade's house. Rocky was supposed to be Batman, so he was very excited about going over to Philip Von Wade's house, but obviously something happened in between going to Philip Von Wade's house and leaving. So they arrive early in the morning at Philip Von Wade's house, and Nick kind of leads the way. He goes in and he tells Philip to come outside so that they can talk. And Philip was actually inside playing a video game. So feverishly, as you can imagine, the family is asking Philip questions. Where's Rocky? Do you know what happened? And he affirms to them that Rocky was at his house that evening, but Rocky got a phone call or text, because I've heard both in my research. He got a phone call or a text and he took off. He just left abruptly. So they take his word for it because they're not armed with any type of, you know, thing to bring him down to the station at this point because the police aren't involved. And so they feel like, okay, obviously he was here. We now know that he was here. We can fill in the timeline a little bit more, but we still don't know where Rocky is. And so they left Philip Von Wade's house feeling somewhat hopeful that Rocky would call them or they would hear something in the next couple of days, but they just did not know what all of this truly meant. So the police were contacted again on Tuesday morning. Now, Labor Day was a Monday. This is now Tuesday. And the police say, hey, well, we can't, our hands are tied. As far as we are concerned, Rocky went missing on his own. And he has every right to do that. So the family did not wait for law enforcement to get involved. They did not wait for the expiration of a missing persons report to expire before they could file a missing persons report. They decided to not do that at all. And they decided to go back to West Covina where his car was found and pass out flyers, place them wherever they could, and then pass out flyers to people in the neighborhood in hopes that somebody saw or heard something. Well, it turns out that a neighbor did hear something. He said that he just heard a lot of dogs just barking and going crazy over something, and it sounded like an animal was being beaten. Rocky's older sister was so concerned because she just felt this impending doom that maybe something happened to her brother. Was that sound the neighbor heard? Her brother crying out for help, wanting some help? So after passing out flyers and not really pinning down anything substantial from neighbors, they decided they needed to go to the media. So his older sister went to news outlets first. I mean, she asked, could they run a story on Rocky and him being missing? But nobody responded. So her next course of action was to go to social media. And if any time this happens to you, which I pray none of us here are Murder in the Black or anywhere, period, find themselves in a situation where their loved one is missing. But if you do, social media can be on your side because it definitely helped the Reyes family. So she started off with just the missing person flyer that they decided to go out and post in West Covina. She posted that on her social media. She asked friends and families to share, and they did. They actually made his post go viral. And as a result of that, those same news outlets that told her no in the beginning now sought her out and asked if they could do a story. And this was her whole point. She felt no type of resentment. She just wanted her brother's story to get out so they could receive some information so they could bring him safely home. So they covered it. And as a result of the coverage, the police got back involved and it landed on the desk of the homicide unit there in West Covina. And they decided to start their investigation where they like totally did not want to start the investigation before. And they pushed it off as far as him being a missing persons. Now they rerouted it to the homicide unit. So they took a closer look at Nick. And I think that you have to take a closer look at Nick because his car, Rocky's car, was found in Nick's neighborhood. Nick knew exactly where he was going. It just all seemed very suspicious. And for even the Reyes family, they felt like Nick knew something. Like Nick wasn't being forthright. And they just needed to know what happened. Now, Nick and Rocky have been friends for over 10 years. They shared a lot of the same common interests. They were into martial arts. Obviously, they were into Comic-Con and anime and comics together. And they also were into dancing. But when it comes to a suspect, you have to fully vet them out. It does not matter what the relationship was before the person went missing. You have to fully investigate. And so the police sat him down for a second interview. He was very forthright about his alibi and where he was. And they were able to substantiate his alibi. But even to boot, they were able to grab some surveillance footage of Nick making purchases that day and all the things he said he was doing up until the nighttime. They were able to substantiate it. And they ruled Nick out as a suspect. Now, Nick's attitude surrounding being interviewed and even being called into question by the Reyes family, he understood it. Like, he fully understood that it didn't look good for him, but he was very open to the process of them checking out his alibi and cooperating fully because he understood that that was just part of the process. And his goal was to help and for Rocky to be found. So he had no problem doing that. Now, the next thing that the police had to do was they had to talk to Phil. One of the patrol officers went out and talked to Philip, and his story matched exactly what he told the Reyes family. There was nothing different. And so they felt like, okay, we have that. And the investigation kind of was at a standstill. But Rocky still hadn't showed up in between all of this time. And honestly, there wasn't a whole lot of time that had expired from the time that Rocky was missing. It was now the next day or 2 or 3 days later. It was Wednesday when the police got involved because the Reyes family knew that they had to get a jump on this investigation in order to find Rocky. And even though now that the police were involved, they still didn't know anything further than what they knew when the investigation started. And let's be honest, the reason why they knew anything at all is because of what they went out and found out themselves. The police didn't offer any extra pieces of information. So the very next morning, the Reyes family goes back into the West Covina community. And this time they actually walk right past Philip's house, Philip Von Wade's house. And his father comes out and they kind of strike up a conversation about their brother being missing. And as a result of this conversation, Philip's father says to the family, he says, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to call my son out here because my son actually had Rocky over here the night that you're saying that he disappeared." Philip comes out of the house and the family is just more intense than they were when they initially talked to Philip. They are intent on getting Philip to remember whatever he can about his encounter with Rocky. And according to Rocky's mother, she said they pounced on him, her words, not mine. So they wanted answers. Where is Rocky? What happened on the day that he went missing? And he recounts what he said previously, but they start repeating the questions. I mean, it's almost like they became the police in an interrogation. And they just really felt like things weren't adding up. Like maybe Philip was hiding something. So Philip starts to get uneasy and they say, well, hey, like if you're not going to talk to us or if you don't want to talk to us, we can just take you down to the police station. You can give them the more information that you may have, like get them to question you. And so he kind of stumbles over himself and finally he says, okay, I'll go. But they said, well, we'll take you down there ourselves. And they literally put him in the car for him to go down to the police station to be interviewed by the West Covina Police Department. So the Reyes family brings in Philip Von Wade. And you have to understand the Reyes family, if you haven't clued in by now, they are committed to understanding what happened to Rocky and to bringing him safely home. And so they have done a lot of this investigation by themselves. And they just know in their heart that Philip knows more than what he is offering them. So they bring him to the police department in hopes that the law enforcement community there can coax something out of him, bring more to light. And so the head detective on the case, he was kind of confused, but he went along with it. And I think that just speaks to his willingness to at least understand that the Reyes wanted answers. And the least that he could do was actually bring Philip into the interview room, sit him down, and have him write out a written statement. And they said, hey, you know, take as long as you need. We just want you to give us in detail what you did on the day that you were supposed to meet up with Rocky, or on the day you did meet up with Rocky. Tell us what you did from the beginning of the day all the way until Rocky left your presence. We just want to know. So the head detective immediately gets up and he leaves him to it, but he has a camera in the interview room. And so he goes and he puts on his headphones because he just wants to observe Phillip's actions, you know, his mannerisms, why he's sitting in there. And Philip just seems very nervous. He keeps rubbing his hands together. It takes him a while to put pen to paper to even begin writing his statement. He picks up his phone and he puts it back down. He just seems very nervous. And to homicide detectives, this is weird. This isn't normal, but still not enough to say that he had really anything to do with Rocky's disappearance. So finally, they decided at that point that they were going to pull Rocky's cell phone data. And they got an emergency ping order to obtain location data. So I want to be very clear. When they pulled Rocky's cell phone data, they didn't immediately get that back. But the emergency ping order to obtain the location data on Rocky's phone was something that they immediately got back within the hour or a couple of hours while Philip was still at the police department writing down his written statement. So after Philip writes down his statement, he goes back into the lobby where the Reyes family is still there, and he sits down in the lobby and they're waiting on this emergency ping order to get back. And they discovered with the information that they were able to receive back from that emergency ping order that Rocky's cell phone, the last place his cell phone pinged, was with a tower that was going up Highway 39. And there's actually a national forest, an LA National Forest up there named Azusa. And that was the last tower that his phone pinged to. And it was around Monday at 7 p.m. And they realized there was no way that he could actually get there on foot, traveling by foot. And so they kind of surmised that more than likely he went up there with someone else. He was in the car with someone else. And so they think this is good information, and they still have Philip there with them in order to question him about what was he doing on Monday at 7 p.m. So they go back out to the lobby to try to talk to Philip, and would you know, Philip was gone. he left. And the Reyes family was right there to tell them, hey, Philip is gone. He left. He's no longer here. So detectives, they don't try to let anybody see them sweat. They professionally and calmly tell everybody, okay, thank you. And so it is at this point that the investigation really gets kicked off into high gear, because they now know that, you know, Rocky's cell phone pinged off to this tower on the way up to National Forest, on the last tower that it could possibly ping off of. Something's not right here. And now Philip has fled the police department, and it's unclear if he was supposed to go, if he was allowed to leave or not. Either way, he's gone, and they need to talk to him. So the police immediately start to kick the investigation off in high gear. They have detectives talking to the Reyes family concerning what they talked to Philip about at his house prior to bringing him down to the police department. And then they have detectives going out to Philip Von Wade's house to meet him there, to retrieve his cell phone and possibly search his house. So they actually get there before Philip even arrives back home. And they are waiting on him. So when he gets out of the car, they obtain verbal and written consent to search Philip's home. Now, it's not Philip's home. It's actually Philip's parents' home, but you understand. So they start to go to the basement where Philip lives, and they see that there are streaks on the wall, like, you know, like someone has just recently cleaned. And they also see that there is, I'm saying see, but it really is that they smelled an overwhelming odor of bleach. And these detectives were on their game, right? They immediately stopped what they were doing, stopped searching, and they went to go get a search warrant to search the house with a warrant. Even though they have verbal and written consent, we know that there is a good lawyer out there who could argue that their search was not permissible. They didn't go and get a search warrant by a judge. And so they could argue the evidence, whatever they found there at the house, if they didn't go get that search warrant, there was a lawyer who would have been able to argue that that evidence wasn't permissible. So they wanted to follow all of the protocols. They get the search warrant immediately. And while they're searching the basement, it's really not what they found. They found some very suspicious things, like streaks on the wall. It's a odor of bleach. But they didn't really find anything inside of the residence. Really, it's what they found on the outside of the residence. They discovered two large trash cans. You know, how you separate your trash, right? You have your trash and then you have your recycling bin. Well, in the large trash can, right on top, they find a Vans shoe, and it was the same size that Rocky wore. And this was the probable cause that they needed to arrest Phil. So they also, when they arrest him, they also go ahead and put out an additional emergency ping order for Philip's cell phone. And also they retrieve his cell phone records. And it's at this point that you kind of see that the nervousness that Philip had at the police station while he was writing that written statement, well, it's the same nervousness that he demonstrated to detectives when he was arrested. So they knew they were on the path to really finding out what took place to Rocky. So in terms of timeline, the police really were rocking and rolling. And this was really due to the Reyes family never letting their foot off of the gas. Because Rocky went missing on Monday, on Labor Day night. And they immediately got the social media piece involved in this story to make the story go viral. Then they got the media came along, and eventually that prompted the police to come along. And that happened all within the week that he went missing. So Philip Von Wade was arrested on Thursday on suspicion of murder, but they had to have some evidence that that arrest was not necessarily valid, but to keep him in custody. And they needed that evidence by Monday. So really the clock was ticking for investigators because they really knew that Philip was involved, but they had to have that evidence so that the DA could make a case. And right now, currently, as the case stood, they did not have enough evidence in order to keep him in jail and for the DA to feel like they could take Philip Von Wade to trial and actually convict him of murder. So there was just a lot of suspicion. So on Friday morning, the head detective heads up to Azusa Canyon, and they head up there because that was the last place Rocky's phone pinged. Now, Azusa Canyon is known for its recreation. It's a good place to go hiking, picnic, trails, all the fun things you can do in a national forest if you love the outdoors. But it's a vast area, right? So they had to really pinpoint exactly where they wanted to center the beginning of their search and then spread out from there. They also knew without a doubt, because they got that emergency ping order back from Philip Von Wade's phone, that Philip and Rocky's cell phones pinged off of the tower, that one cell phone tower that was on Highway 39 before you would get into the canyon. They also had video surveillance footage that Philip's car was going up to this canyon on Monday night at the exact same time that both he and Rocky's phone pinged. So they were sure, without a doubt, that they were both at that canyon together. Now, they had a probable location, as I said before. Now, it was a 40-minute window between the last ping when Philip's phone pinged to the cell phone tower. He stayed up in the mountains for about 40 minutes, and then they knew he left because his cell phone pinged off of the tower coming back down to Highway 39 to get back to West Covina. Now, they were able to pinpoint where exactly Philip more than likely was. They weren't sure, but they looked on Philip's social media account, and he was just up in Azusa Canyon weeks prior to the murder, and he was up there hunting. And so they were able to pinpoint exactly where he was or where more than likely he would have went. So they use all this information and they are searching. They're searching and the day is going on and, you know, they reach the afternoon and they know that they have to have additional evidence by Monday. And so the head detective is talking to the DA back down the canyon where which is like the only place you can get cell phone bars and, you know, you can actually get reception to talk. And he has a search and rescue team up further, searching, hoping. And he's telling the DA, like, listen, I know it is my job to give you all this evidence, but we're trying our best. Hopefully we can get something before day's end. But I know that this Philip Von Wade guys, he has something to do with this disappearance of Rocky. He is our guy. I just feel it in my bones. And as he's about to get off the phone with the DA, one of the heads of his search and rescue team actually come and find him. And they said, hey, we have a body. The body was wrapped in black plastic as well as it was covered in duct tape. And when the head detective headed out there, they knew that it was Rocky because Rocky had these red braids and they were very distinctive. And they were sure that it was Rocky and he was now deceased. And just like that, within a week's time, almost a week's time since his disappearance, the family's hopes and dreams of Rocky coming home were shattered in that moment, in that instant. And the detective called the Reyes family and passed down the news. And when his mother received that message, she immediately bolted downstairs to the front door and just blindly went out because, according to her, she no longer wanted to live. She just could not believe that her son was gone. And the dynamics of their family were changed forever. It would never be the same, ever. So the police now had everything they needed to give to the DA. So they hand off this evidence, and Philip was charged with first-degree murder with a special circumstance charge, which was lying in wait. Now, lying in wait is kind of hard for prosecutors to actually prove, because it's not only stating that the murder was premeditated, but solicited. So they discovered, while they finally got the cell phone records, that Philip has sent a text message to Rocky that said, "Come to my house alone." And that text message by itself just revealed the intentionality of Philip to want to murder Rocky. He wanted to act out this vicious attack. Philip had the possibility of, now, if he was convicted and went to trial, the death penalty was on the table. So they are prepared. The DA is prepared to go to trial, but Philip decides that he is going to plead guilty to a lesser charge of first degree murder. And his story was this: Rocky showed up to his place and he was prepared to measure him for his Batman costume. But then Rocky, out of nowhere, grabs an axe off of Philip's bookcase. And then in response, Philip grabs an additional axe that he had in the basement. He avoids one of Rocky's swings, and then he knocks Rocky to the ground, killing him. And you know what? They just believe that the motive, right? I know you're probably itching to wondering why. Why would he carry out this vicious attack on Rocky? And the police just believe that his motive was he had a fascination with death, and he had made several different weapons, and they found all of these things in his basement. Like, he made axes and had them with a hammer handle on the axe. So he was making weapons, and he just wanted to know what it felt like to kill another human being. And Rocky's sister said that Rocky was so trusting of people and he was friendly that it just unfortunately made him an easy target to an evil person like Philip Von Wade. We all know that Philip's story wasn't true. The police believe that he attacked Rocky from behind and killed him. Rocky never saw it coming. He was literally killed within an instant. And the sad and crazy thing about this entire thing is that Rocky came there for a measurement for his Batman costume, and that was never made. I also think that this speaks to the intentionality of Philip to carry out this murder. He was for sure lying in wait. Philip Von Wade received a sentence of 27 years to life. And one of the things in the documentary, his best friend Nick felt responsible. He even felt like the family, the Reyes family, held him responsible for Rocky's death. But the truth of the matter is that he wasn't responsible. And he did not carry out that heinous act on Rocky. He simply introduced him to somebody who made a costume for him in hopes that this person would make a costume for Rocky. And thankfully, the Reyes family told Nick, "Hey, we don't blame you for the introduction of Philip. You had no idea. And if you could, you would probably take back that introduction if you knew, if you had the forethought, but you didn't." And I think that Nick just carries a lot of guilt in this scenario. You may be wondering why Rocky's car was found in Nick's neighborhood, abandoned with the car running. Well, the answer is simple. Philip wanted to make it look like, you know, first of all, that he was by Nick's house, which was his friend, right? It was a deterrence. But not only that, it was made to throw investigators or anybody who would find his car, it was to throw it off of his trail, right? To get it off of him. And so he left the car in Nick's neighborhood with purpose and with intentionality. This is the story of Rakim Rocky Reyes. Takeaway. So my takeaway, I think, is twofold. One, I went and looked up additional source materials to include in our show notes, which you can find that in the episode details. But when I went and searched for some articles surrounding this particular case, I noticed there wasn't just a ton. There just wasn't a lot. And I have to remember that this case happened in 2016, and I'm sure it was very popular within the community of West Covina and Cucamonga, where Rocky was from. But I just wish there was more. And this was not a case that I've ever heard about, right? And so I just think there is so much that we can all draw from when it comes to the issue of safety. And that's the one of the themes for me about this case, is that you can never be too safe. And Rocky didn't do anything wrong. I mean, he literally did nothing wrong but exist and just met evil, pure evil, when he went to that man's house. But what I want to encourage us to do for the people that are here is, you know, you can never be too safe. There is no such thing as being too safe. So if you go to somebody's house for the first time to get your hair done, it's okay to have somebody on the phone. It's okay to have somebody go to that appointment with you. You know, one of the things that I have suggested here before is share your location, right? That's a duh, right? But share your location with somebody indefinitely. You can do that on Apple phones. Listen, I have nothing to do with Android. I know nothing about them. That's what I mean. So maybe if we share some good safety tips that we can do for each other, have people on the phone, have your location turned on. All these safety tips, if we can share them, those are my two. And I really want you guys to go in the question and answer section of this episode and tell me some additional tips that we can all do to keep ourselves safe. Because I just think you can never be too safe. It's always okay. Because odds are, if nothing happens, that's okay. But if something happens, then at least your family and friends can know where to start. And I just want to, this has nothing to do with takeaway, but I just want to say, the Reyes family was so pivotal in this case being solved. I mean, I almost kind of get emotional about it. But when it came to their love for Joaquin Rocky Reyes, they loved him and they were committed to finding him with or without the police. And that type of commitment should be applauded. It should be screamed from the mountaintops. They did an excellent job advocating for Rocky. When the police, they handed that case to the police, literally brought Philip Vonway down to the police station and said, you need to talk to him. And I admire them so much. And I think that hopefully none of us ever find ourselves in this type of situation. I imagine the Rocky Reyes family never thought they would ever be there. But they acted so well, like exuberantly well. And I hope that if you ever find yourself in that situation, always, always stick with your gut and advocate for your loved one to find them. And it didn't end at all how they wanted or how they could ever think or imagine. But they got some closure. They got Rocky's body back. They were able to have a burial for him. And as his sister said, their family will forever be changed. But that is the episode. And if you have more to add, I am so curious to know what you think. So I encourage you guys to definitely tell me what you think. Leave comments on our Instagram or on our Facebook. Let me know what you thought about the case. Let me know if you actually were in the West Covina area at the time and you heard about this case, or you knew when it was went viral. I mean, they got this case solved in almost a week. That's unheard of, y'all. Like, seriously, I know it happens, but I watched a lot of true crime and it's really not like that. So I just admire the Reyes family. Rest in peace to Joaquin Rocky Reyes. So that is our episode for today. So I encourage you guys to continue to collaborate with one another in the comments. I love how you guys were able to, somebody made a correction for MD's episode last week. And that was not Mrs. Robbie's daughter, Andre Montgomery Jr. That wasn't, his mother was not her daughter. It was actually Andre Montgomery Jr.'s father, who was Robbie's son, Miss Robbie's son. So I want to clarify that for anybody who may have missed that message. I had about maybe two or three of you guys come and tell me, and I appreciate that. I'm always humbled by corrections and I always want to be corrected when the information is wrong. Boom. Okay, we helping each other. So that is our case for today. And I will see you guys next week. Share and care with your friends and family. Until next time, this is Murder in the Black. I love you. Bye.